Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review and stick it up here on the iTunes podcast feed or wherever you're listening to this. You can find it there, sfbrp.com, of course. Now, about a week ago, I did the last review of a book, and actually I'd finished this book around about the same time as I reviewed the last book, but I have been very ill in this past week, and I probably could have got together the energy to do the review, except my throat was really bad. So after about a week, my throat is just recovering. Actually, maybe if you listen to the last podcast, you can hear me sort of coughing at some point, or maybe I need a drink a bit more often. But yeah, so if I cough during this episode, I'll try and turn away from the microphone or edit it out or do something like that, but hopefully I'll be able to get through to the end. Also, I dropped into the feed a podcast that was on called the Atomic Trivia War 9000, which is a fun little podcast where they where people answer questions, and I had a lot of fun with that. Maybe I'll drop the next episode into the feed as well. But hopefully, if you listen to that and you heard the opening lines to the science fiction novels, you managed to get them as quickly and as easily as I did in my hot seat round there. Anyway, check it out. It's a fun little podcast that I listen to mainly because I know the people who do it. Jason, I chat with him online on different forums and things like that. So let's get on to today's I was just mentioning this. Let's just open this up here as well. I looked for my on iTunes, the iTunes store, and looked at the customer ratings, it says here, or the customer reviews of the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. I mentioned this, I think, maybe in the last episode, but I got lots of 5-star reviews, lots of 4-star reviews, but a few 1-star reviews, and they're right here as well. Normally, I don't reply to I'm not that interested in reviews like this on iTunes, but I just thought, hey, this is interesting. One of them goes, you know, what a mess. You know, he says, there's meandering, unstructured review. He says, how about, he says, instead of grabbing in on the beginning, have an opening, enjoy the book, give a summary and stuff like that. I think I do that normally, don't I? And he says, how about a formatted breakdown, critique the setting, then the character development, etc. And I'm like, wait a second, has he ever listened to this podcast? Because that is what I do. I always start off with the setting, and then I talk about the plot, and then I talk about the characters, and then I talk about the science and technology, and then I talk about, you know, the action and things, and then I talk about the writing style and the way it's written, then I talk about the themes, and then I give my conclusion and stuff like that. So, I mean, if anyone feels this podcast isn't structured enough, please, make suggestions and stuff. Anyway, this is the review which really stood out to me that I looked at this. It's from the 20th of June, 2010, and this is, of course, the first time I've seen this, because I don't normally look at these reviews here. It goes, this guy only wants simple fantasy stories where stupid farm boy finds a magic sword and leads his party into a castle to destroy the evil wizard. If the story gets more complicated than that, then he says there is no plot or direction. Millions of Gene Wolfes and George R.R. Martin readers are wrong, and this guy is a genius. And that's actually let me put it this way, unperceptive review. He's obviously just listened to his favourite book, or his favourite book being reviewed. And I know this is because his username on iTunes is, or her, maybe, is Winter is Coming, which is the, what is that? That is the motto of the Stark family in, you know, George R. R. Martin's, Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire, whatever the overriding book is called there. And it's really strange that, because I think he just completely misses the plot of what I was saying, or misses the point of what I was saying, because I've never said that there is no plot in a book, because whatever happens is the plot. And I'm not saying that I like simplistic plots, it's just that the point is that if at any point in the book you can't tell me what a character is going somewhere for, and when they get there, what they want to do or what they're wanting to achieve, I find it very difficult to identify with that. And it's very strange for me, or let me put it this way, I can't engage with characters if at any point in the book I'm not actually quite sure what they're wanting. And when it comes to fantasy, it seems like it's a common problem. Not always, like I say. There is actually a lot of fantasy books that you can read where you just go, okay, well, I know what this main character is wanting or what you're doing. And often that does lead to the sort of like the quest plot, but in the Game of Thrones, there is literally people that go, right, I'm going to go here, and then they go there, and then they just go, well, actually, no, actually, now what I want to do is turn around and go back in this other direction. Now, if there is a point to that, that's great. Don't tell me I don't like complicated plots in fantasy. I really do. I'd like to read complicated plots in fantasy, but just meandering and characters not knowing why they're going somewhere or what they're doing when they get there doesn't make for a good and tight and interesting and engaging plot, no matter how well we love the the characters, which are really, really good. I actually quite enjoyed the characters, you know, in George R. R. Martin's book as well, and the writing was really good, and the world building was very, you know, dynamic and things like that. I'm just saying that if you want me to care about what people are doing, they've got to care about what they are doing in themselves, and just sort of surviving isn't enough. Which brings me to today's book, which is The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie, which I should have brought up on goodreads.com here. Let me see if I can type it in here, because this is where I normally get the... man, I should have done this beforehand. Maybe that guy did have a bit of a point when he was saying, hey, you should prepare and make notes. I did make some notes, I just didn't open it up here. So, we get this. It's 515 pages, published in 2007, so a pretty recent book. And the reason I want you to read this is just, you know, because I want to check out some new fantasy series. You could probably tell that's for, you know, my reading for the last year, is to see what people are writing in fantasy at the moment to sort of get a handle, you know, on some of these new authors, younger authors writing. And trying to sort of redefine the fantasy genre for the current generation, maybe you could put it that way. So a bit of a blurb here. It says, Logan Ninefinger's infamous barbarian has finally run out of luck. Caught in one feud too many, he's on the verge of becoming a dead barbarian, leaving nothing behind him but bad songs, dead friends, and a lot of happy enemies. You know, blah, 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 blah. Nobleman... guy, Captain Giselle, yeah, he is a character. Inquisitor Glockter is a character. Yeah, actually, it's a bit straight. Oh, yeah, murderous conspiracies rise to the surface. Old scores are ready to be settled, and the line between hero and villain is sharp enough to draw blood. Unpredictable, compelling, wickedly funny, and packed with unforgettable characters. The Blade Itself is a noir fantasy with a real cutting edge. So that's a bit of a blurb about it, a bit of an introduction. So let's get into my normal review. Here we go with the world. So what we have is a world which is, a lot of the action takes place in sort of like the kingdom with the white civilized European kind of medieval kind of setting kind of people there. So we tick that in the north. Guess what? Barbarians. Tick that. Some kind of trolls are also northwest or somewhere. It's not really clear. I didn't have a map. Maybe if I'd had a map. Maybe there is no map in this book. I don't know. But anyway, so if there is this, there's some sort of barbarian trolls. Sort of like, you know, that lately evil Neanderthals that have been conjured by the past. You know, the no-men, if you will, if you read The Prince of Nothing. Anyway, tick, there's also down in the south, you've got the dark-skinned sort of counter civilization. You know, they used to be at war with this sort of the white civilized European things, but now there's some uneasy peace there as well. So we can tick that box. And there's this city, and lots of the action takes place in the capital city. And of course, in this capital city, we've got a large castle that was built in the past and now towers over the latest architecture. You know, tick. You know, is there sewers? Yes, there's sewers. Ticks. Is there whores? Yes, there's whores. There's ticks. So like that. And so I'll just say, you know, all the stuff that you really want, or maybe you really don't want, but you're going to get from traditional fantasy is right here. So yeah, very generic, but then again, this is a genre piece, so maybe you shouldn't, you know, knock something for being very generic. But I can't think of a single thing in this book that I've not seen elsewhere done far, far, far better. Because there's nothing to it, you know, to bring it back to, say, like the Game of Thrones, you've got this wall across the top of the world, which is, you know, which is an ice wall, and winter is coming, because you've got these long, long years where you get 20 years of winter, and then 20 years of summer, and all that kind of stuff going on. There's more, you know, there's much more going on there in the world, and you've got this, you know, whole continent sort of defined and things like that. So just compared to other fantasy, it's just like there's just nothing to the world building at all, or nothing new to it, or nothing new which is done well at all. So the story, well, let's get to some of the characters, actually, because this is a sort of a character, like a cast of characters. We got, like, as I mentioned before, there's Logan Ninefingers. He's up north, and he has got nine fingers, and he is a barbarian, and he meets up with a wizard called let's just say Gandalf, and Gandalf says, hey, you, I want you to come and work with me and help me out. And he goes, okay. And then they head south to the city with, you know, where all the white European people live. And in the city, there is this one kid called Giselle. He's like this rich guy who is a major in the army, but he's only got into the army because he's, you know, he's from the nobility, and he buys his way in. And then so he's got to deal with the hardships of his life, which are very small and infrequent hardships to him. But to him, of course, they're the worst things in the world. So he's, you know, also training for this fencing tournament, and that's what he's doing at the beginning of the book. And then the third main character, there are some other minor characters, but I'm not going to mention them really because they don't come into the plot too often. Then there's Glockdat. And Glockdat, he works for the Inquisition, and he is a torturer in the Inquisition and an investigator. So, what happens? Well, that's actually a good question. What does happen? Glockdat is caught up in this palace intrigue, when there's the Inquisition is covertly battling with the Mercer's Guild, and they're sort of like the tradesmen of the city, of the country there as well. Now, this is actually quite interesting. If this had been a novella in its own right, it would have been pretty good, I think, because Glockdat is a really fun character. He's, like, damaged in some delightfully interesting ways. You know, all of his teeth have been smashed out, and, you know, he's got his gammy leg, and he's got a bad back all the time. And so he's doing his thing in interesting ways, and he's got the interesting lines and the interesting monologues. And when he tortures someone, it's actually, you know, quite funny in a way. He tortures people in funny ways, and the things that he does is quite fun. And also, he's got these two practicals, his two assistants. One is called Frost, and he is an albino, and the other is called, well, let's call him Severain, because I can't remember his real name. Anyway, so these are the two guys who are learning to be inquisitors, if you say, see what I mean. But also, they're just sort of like his heavies as well, when he needs to do it. And it's actually really good to see some sidekick characters like this, who are completely competent in what they're doing. They just get on with the job and do their job, and they're actually quite fun to read about and stuff like that. So, at about halfway through the book, this story of Glockdat battling and helping the Inquisition battle against the Mercers and take the Mercers down a notch or two, all of that comes to a conclusion. And then for the rest of the book, Glockdat sort of just hangs about for a bit, and there's no repercussions from anything he's done at the beginning of the book, but he, like I say, he meets up with some of these other characters who come into the city a bit, and he talks to Giselle a bit, and he does some little jobs here and there, but really, nothing important, and there's no fallout from the important things that he was doing at the beginning of the book, which makes me think, actually, maybe that wasn't as important as I thought it was to the book. So that's like one of the main subplots there, and it just leads nowhere and then doesn't even seem that important anymore to any of the characters involved after it happens. So, what else is going on? Logan, like I said, he starts off at North. You know, he's got this band of soldiers, or he's in this sort of band of soldiers that he's leading in some way. These have been kicked out of the barbarian army to the North, and they're attacked by, like, the evil Neanderthals, and so actually this is quite strange, because in any action movie there's sort of like there's various cliches, there's certain things that you're gonna see, like if there's a helicopter, it's gonna blow up, if there's cars involved, there's gonna be a car chase in any action movie. Now, an action movie set in historic times or anywhere in the country, the cliche is there's a chase, and then someone jumps off the cliff or falls off the cliff and into the river below at the bottom, and then is swept down the river a bit. Now, this happens just over and over and over again in all the big stories and all the big movies, and it happens in all the small movies as well. You know, it happened in the Avatar movie. He gets separated from his people by, jumping into a river. And also, I just watched Predators the other day, which is the latest Predator movie, and exactly the same thing. They run, and they jump in and fall into the water, you know, beside the waterfall. And this book opens with that scene, with Logan's story kicks off from there. And I thought, well, this is, you know, slightly interesting. It's told in a fun way. The characters are well portrayed. The writing is quite exciting. You know, he's going to do this. Is he going to survive? Of course he's going to survive. He's a guy right at the beginning of the book. Or maybe he's not. That would be really great to see an action scene at the beginning of a fantasy book, and the guy who you think is going to be the character to lead you through, he just dies in that first scene and is maybe killed by the main character. I don't know. It could be interesting to do that kind of thing. Maybe it's been done before, but here, not at all. So we start off with this cliche, this sort of like set in the country kind of back of beyond barbarian kind of thing, you know, Dances of the Wolves, jump down the waterfall kind of thing going on there. No, what is it? Maybe Dances of the Wolves. I'm thinking of The Last Mohican there. Anyway, so it continues with that same level of cliche. Now, Logan, he fights some guys and he meets up with Gandalf, who is the first among the magicians. And then Gandalf says to him, hey, I want you to come and work for me. And he's like, Logan's like, okay. He doesn't ask why. He just presumes that, you know, Gandalf is the guy to be working for. And then they head down into the city and they get there around about halfway through the book. And then from then on, Logan seems to do nothing of interest or of importance or of value. And Gandalf is doing that kind of stuff, but behind the scenes. And Logan isn't in on the plan. He doesn't know what's going on, so he's just hanging out. So you're thinking, well, what else is going on? What really takes a lot of the book is that Giselle, who is this, you know, spoiled brat army major, is training for a fencing tournament. And it's the tournament which takes up a huge chunk of the second half of the book. And do you want to know why this tournament is so important? It's because... No, we're never really told why this tournament is so important. We're told everyone's excited about it and everything's going on like that. But I was waiting. I was going to say, oh, something important is going to happen here at this tournament. But it doesn't. And, you know, like Logan was there and Giselle is there. And I was thinking, well, it would be great if maybe Logan and Giselle make friends. And then Logan becomes Giselle's second. So when Giselle can't fight in the final, Logan has to take over and become his champion at that point, you know, and Logan kicks the ass of the, you know, the best sword fighter in the entire country, or is an entire kingdom of, you know, the white European civilized people. And that would have been meaningful, because all the way throughout we hear about these barbarian hordes in the north who are united under this new king. And because he is a barbarian king, this new king is going to go to war with the white, you know, European civilized person's kingdom in the center. And the reason for that is because he is a barbarian, and the reason he's a barbarian who wants to go to war is just because. Maybe I can't think of any sort of trade or expansion or any kind of reason why he's going to go to war, except that that is what he does. He unites the tribes, and then to keep the tribes united he has to go to war. And I'm just thinking, is this the level that we're going to have the politics going on and stuff going on here with this thing? So anyway, I thought it'd be really interesting if Logan used to be the champion of this, he used to be the champion of this barbarian king, because the way it worked is that you could be conquered in battle, or you could have your champions fight, and the winner of the champions, that side wins, or that army, we're just going to declare them winners, and then they can take over the lands and commands of the other people. But Logan fell out of favor with this king, you know, we found that out quite early on in the book. And I thought, well, this would be great, because this tournament is going to decide who's going to be the champion of this central white European civilized people's country, and who's going to face the barbarians. And wouldn't it be great if Logan becomes the champion of this country, and he used to be the champion of the barbarian, and now he's going to be in the same way... I'm not going to give anything away to say what this is like, but, you know, that could have been happening, but no, it doesn't happen. And that's what happens. That's what happens in the book. There's a tournament where not a lot happens, and in the end, well, I'm not going to give away if Giselle wins or not, but that he wins or he doesn't win doesn't have any impact of what's gone before, or, you know, or fulfill anything that's gone before, or fulfills anything that's going to happen between then and the end of the book. And at the end of the book, what happens is that, you know, Joe Abercrombie goes, oh, wait a second, we haven't had a big fight for a while. So then he has another big fight where Logan fights for a long time against someone who you don't really understand why he's fighting against them, or you don't understand why they're fighting against him. And it just goes on like that. And you just think, well, really, is this it? Is this it? We're just going to sort of hang around in a city and do stuff when nobody knows what's going on. Oh, yeah, and also, the king, let's call him, I don't know, Theoden, is this old sort of guy who's a bit senile, and he's being manipulated by the court, and let's call his main advisor, I don't know, something like Wormtongue. You know, it's like, you just go, wait a second, I've read all of this before, all the different elements that I'm seeing here in this fantasy book. It's like you've just gone, oh, I'll take a bit from there, and I'll take a bit from there, and I'll take a bit from there, and I'll put them together in a way which is, you know, pretty bland and not a lot going on at all there. So, Yeah, so people get ready for war and other people go to war. Now, the Prince of Nothing book, the first book in that, which I think is just called The Prince of Nothing, it's all about that. It's all about you know, we're going to go, okay, we're going to go to war against these people. And they go, oh, that's a long way away. It's going to take a long time to prepare everyone and get everyone together and to decide who's leading the army and to do all of this and do all of that and work out, you know, all the logistics and everything like that and who's going to feed the army and where the armies are going to come from. It's a really interesting topic for a fantasy book. And that's what, you know, R. Scott Bakker does in the Prince of Nothing series. And it's fascinating because it's like a retelling of the Crusades converging on Constantinople and then going off down to the Holy Land. It's really interesting. But here, all the preparations for the war, it just goes, people are going, oh, man. Oh, there's a war on. We've got to prepare for it. Oh, this is going to be terrible. Where are we going to get the soldiers? And all of the noblemen going, I'm not going to send my soldiers. I'm going to send the worst soldiers ever. And everyone goes, oh, this isn't going to work out. And it's just stupid because we know that this country is, or this, you know, the white European civilized people's country is going to come up against the barbarians and really struggle against them because they don't even care about the war. How am I meant to be caring about this? So what happens at the end of the book is that, you know, some of our main characters get together and they leave on a magical quest for a magical MacGuffin somewhere, which we don't know what they're going for. They don't know what they're going for. They didn't decide to go on the quest. They were picked by, say, Gandalf to go on the quest. Gandalf knows where they're going and what they're looking for, but they don't know what they're going to do there. In the same way that Logan was just told, hey, we're going down to this, you know, to the white person's European civilized person's city. And he goes, oh, okay, let's go. And then just does. It's like, if he doesn't care where he's going or what he's going to do when he gets there, it's really, really difficult for me as a reader to understand why that works. You know, in The Lord of the Rings, which is sort of what this book is, it's like, hey, let's get together a band of heroes to go on a magical quest. And that's what you get at the end of the book. In The Lord of the Rings, there's the council and they... at Rivendell, isn't there? And they all get together and they go, oh, well, that's not in the end. It's actually halfway through that book, isn't it? Where they actually put together the fellowship. They get there and there's lots of people who are really interested in what's going to happen. They're all like, fuck me, darkness and war on the horizon. We need to get rid of this fucking ring. It's really important. And everyone goes, is it really important? And you know, and the hobbits are going, yeah, fuck me, it's really important. We've just been chased all this way. Everyone wants this ring. We've got the ring wraiths flying around and fuck like that. And you know, and the dwarves are going, fuck me, there's dragons and all that. And everyone's really like down about this. They're all really wanting to find a solution, and the solution is, hey, let's go on a quest. And you know, and they go on a quest, and it means a lot to the people taking part. You know how I know it means a lot to the people taking part? Because it fucking means a lot to the people taking part. And that's how I know it's important. That's how I know it's important to the world. And at the end of this book, we get literally five characters getting together. And one of the characters knows why they're going on this trip and why it's important and what they're going to do when they get there and stuff. And he just doesn't tell us what's going on, or he doesn't tell the other characters what's going on. And they all seem happy enough to do his bidding, yet they're not the agents who are deciding what's going on or why. And I'm just, and again, this might be setting up for a really good, complex plot. But if your entire first book, you know, comprises of people just meandering around and doing stuff for reasons that they don't understand, being told to do stuff and just doing it, and then other people enigmatically pulling the strings from behind the scenes, it's really difficult for me to care about what they're doing. I'm not saying it's a bad plot. I'm not saying it's not interesting. I'm not saying it won't lead to more interesting things. But if by the end of the book, I don't know what I'm meant to be caring about on behalf of these other characters, it makes it really difficult for me to pick up the next book in the series. Because here, when the book just kind of ends and I'm just like, ugh. Anyway, what's my next little title here? Yeah, that was about plot. Let's talk a bit about the characters. Like I say, Glockter is really interesting. He discovers at one point that he's a single friend, and I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be the catalyst. He's going to become a different kind of person. But no, actually, he doesn't change at all in this book. Same with Logan. He just starts off as one thing, and then we get a glimpse into his past character at the end, and I thought, oh, he's actually a little bit more interesting. And then he goes back to how he was just a bit before, and I just think, well, okay, so we know more about him, but he hasn't changed at all. So again, maybe he'll change in a later book, but we don't, you know, I don't see it coming. And then Giselle, he's this spoiled brat, and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. He's going to get his ass kicked in the tournament, and the girl he wants isn't going to like him, you know, in a slightly more nuanced way that she doesn't like him already. And I thought he was going to learn something, and by the end of the book, no, he's just still in love with himself, and he's just still the same guy as normal. It's a bit weird, actually. At the beginning of the book, he's very self-assured. Then at one point, he suddenly becomes less assured of himself and a little bit more naive and things. And it's like, you know, it's like it was edited a bit badly. You know, his character was written and then they thought, oh no, we need the character to be a bit more catchy at the beginning. So we're going to make him a bit stronger at the beginning. But then they forgot to, you know, realize, I say they, Joe Abercrombie forgot to realize what the character is meant to be doing in the book. I don't know. So there are some other characters that come in and out. I actually quite like the story. Again, if there was this one part where Logan's his old band of soldiers and his old band of mercenaries, I guess they are now almost bandits as well, they're sort of hanging out up in the north and they're not sure what they have to do because they've been kicked out of the barbarian army and they're sort of hanging around, what, you know, not sure, you know, and they've all got their different names. One of them is called the Dogman. You've got the I can't remember the other guy's name. Oh, you've got the Weakest. You've got the I can't remember. Anyway, but you've got, it's been a week since I've read this, the names haven't really stuck in my head, but they are some cool names and they are some interesting people. They go on this little quest of their own that they meet up with these people and they're like, oh man, someone should really warn us, you know, we should really warn the king, the barbarian king, about the Flatheads here as well. He says that he's our enemy now, but you know, if everyone goes off and you know, if all the barbarian army goes off and fights down in the south against the, you know, the white European civilized kingdom, we're just leaving everyone up here, you know, and the Flatheads will come in and they'll just eat everyone and destroy everything. And they're like, okay, we've got to warn someone about something. Now that actually was quite an interesting little short story, and the other characters doing stuff and the characters are learning stuff about them. And, you know, one of them dies at one point and they're like, oh man. Oh, life does have meaning. There is something to live for and you know, all this kind of stuff. And their little story up there, actually really interesting. That's a definition of what a story is that they experience something. There's a crisis. You know, they have a goal and a plan. They try and fulfill the goal and the plan. They may or may not succeed by the end of it. But, you know, they actually do something that they are the agents for, that they actually know what they're wanting to do and go and do it. So it is possible. There are glimpses of really fun storytelling in this book, but a lot of it isn't. And again, those minor characters up there in the north went on a more interesting journey and a more valid journey and a more satisfying journey as characters, and you know, just as on a journey, as a quest, than anyone does, who, any of these main characters as well. So yeah, characters are, you know, very well portrayed. You know, like I say, Glockta, the Inquisitor, you know, it's very interesting to read about him, but again, you sort of want him to have a function in the story. You want him to, like I say, up until halfway through the book, it felt like he was doing important matter, you know, important job. And then halfway through the book, he stops doing that job. And then from then on, I didn't like him as a character anymore because I couldn't identify with what he was wanting to do or what he was doing. And then he was just this moaning guy who was moaning about his back. And you didn't see him torturing anyone anymore. You didn't see him being an inquisitor anymore. And that's what character is. Character is action. Character isn't just someone mulling over stuff. It's them doing things. It's them learning things. It's them becoming new things or them becoming an old thing again. I don't know. It's a bit messing there. So, magic stuff. There is some magic in this book. It is not very exciting. There was this one bit which I thought was going to be exciting. Right at the very beginning, Logan says, oh, yeah, there's nothing to do. There's no one to talk to except the spirits, and the spirits never have anything interesting to say. Now, when I first read that, or when I first heard that because I was listening to the audiobook, I thought, oh, that's interesting. There's spirits in this book. But then I thought, oh, no, it's probably just a turn of phrase. And then I thought, oh, no, it might not just be the turn of phrase that, you know, the spirits talk to you and they don't say anything. And then I thought, oh, it would be really cool if there's a fantasy world where spirits do hang out, but they can't really talk to each other very well. And so if you ever meet a spirit, they're completely harmless and they're, you know, they don't do anything. They just sort of hang out and people go, spirit, tell me what is important in the world. And it turns out the spirits, you know, each individual spirit can't communicate with any other spirit and can't move around any more than a human does. So that all the spirits are just these lonely people just hanging out going, oh, well, you know, spirit, what is important? It's like, I'm dead. I can't, you know, and I've not been out of this valley since I'm dead. Nothing's happened here except you've turned up. What can I tell you? I'm not very helpful. And I thought, oh, that'd be a great thing to happen in a fantasy book. And that is actually kind of what we have here. We've got the spirits that sort of hang out and, you know, they talk to some people, but they're not very helpful. And it seemed actually the most interesting part of the interesting bit of magic in this book was when Logan, at the beginning of the book, who has this talent for, you know, being able to hear what dead people say, he was really surprised that they actually have a message for him. They say, oh yeah, yeah, Gandalf wants you, or Baez, or whatever his name is. Baez wants you down south, you should go meet him. And he's like, oh, fuck me, spirits. They're actually useful for once. Never expected that. And then he goes and does something. And then we never hear about the spirits for the rest of it. And there is some other magic going on, but it's like, I don't know. There's one of the magicians at one point, one of the sorcerers, he has this real cool trick of fooling people into seeing him as something else. And it would be cool, except that it's too powerful. He just uses it at every point, and it never fails, and it always just works, and you never really think, oh, what will happen if this fails? It's just because you never see any magic in the book failing at all. The magic is just powerful. And I think one of the most important things in a fantasy book is to show some limits to the magic, or show it, if you show it failing in some way, you show how powerful it is. And I think that's very important as well. Like, at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, Gandalf is like, oh, wow, I could do this. Oh, I can't touch that ring. That ring is too powerful for me. If I do anything with it, I will fail. And you see lots of magic and other things failing in The Lord of the Rings. For example, Gandalf dies at one point, and you think, oh, fuck. That's how powerful he is, and that's how powerful a magician or, you know, a wizard is in there. And yes, I mean, all of that kind of stuff can go on in fantasy. And here, I don't think we ever see magic fail at any point in the book. And we never get outlined how powerful magic is in the book. And all these different things that you know, it doesn't matter how good magic is, you know, or how interesting it is. Or, you know, like Brandon Sanderson, he does these weird and wacky magic systems. We always see people using magic to do something and getting to the limit of what magic is. And then from then on, they've got to use their wits and they've got to use their intelligence. And yeah. Here, we don't get any of that, which is a real pity. So, action, yeah. I normally talk about some action. We meet some bad guys along the way, and the bad guys get killed, because that's what happens, because, you know, the author suddenly goes, oh, wait a second, haven't had a battle scene for a long time, haven't had a fight, let's just drop one in here. And again, fights are good, as long as we care about the people fighting, and we care about what they're fighting for. And this does happen throughout the book. There are some really good battle scenes where you actually care about it. But then, like I say, this big action set piece at the end where Logan is attacked in the city, and people are chasing him round and trying to arrest him, and then they're trying to kill him, and he's trying to kill them back and stuff like that. And as I was reading this, I was going, wait a second, why are they trying to attack? Why is it all of a sudden really important that they kill or kidnap Logan? Why? Who is the Inquisitor who is ordering this? And we find out that there has been this other Inquisitor hanging out behind the scenes for ages during the book. And then at the end of the book, that Inquisitor suddenly comes out and tries to kill Logan. And Logan, you know, of course, fights his way out of it in a pretty cool way. But again, you're just thinking, well, why doesn't Glock to just say, hey, why are you guys trying to fight Logan? Why don't we just go up to him and ask him some questions? You know, I met him the other day. He seems like quite a reasonable chap. We'll just ask him. But no, it's just sort of a weird thing going on there at the end of the book. But that happens in many fantasy books as well. They go, oh, we're at the end. What do we need? Ah, oh, we need a fight sequence. Let's do it. Which is actually what they did in the Lord of the Rings movie, isn't it? At the end of the first one, the end of the Fellowship of the Rings, they actually go, oh, there's no big fight at the end. What we'll do, we'll take the big fight that happens at the beginning of the Two Towers and put it there at the end of the movie. So I can understand why people want to do that, but you've got to give me a reason to care. The writing, like I said, the characterization is pretty good. There's some really funny lines, and then there's some really not funny lines, and then there's some lines which just get very boring. Like I say, writing can be good in service of good characterization, but also the writing in this book can be quite bad in service of bad characterization. And also, like I say, the world building, there's a lot of description, which is pretty good, in service of the interesting things of the book. But then again, when you're just when you're floridly describing something which is actually not very interesting plot wise or, you know, world building wise, it doesn't matter how good the writing is or how serviceable the writing is, it's not there. The narration, though, was really, really good fun. And this is the reason why I would recommend, or let me put it this way, if you're going to experience this book, listen to the narration, because the narration is actually really good fun. Let me bring up Audible, because I want to give this guy props here. Quickly look on my library on audible.com, because he does have some really good voices. He's got a lot of character to his voice. He's got a lot of character to his to his narration when he's not doing character voices. The character voices themselves are really good. Like I say, he takes. I think I mentioned this in the last episode of my podcast as well, because he's doing the narrator is Stephen Pacey. Because he's doing lots of different accents, and I never once thought that Logan had a Cockney accent as a character, but he's always given that accent to distinguish him as a character, and so each of the different characters, doesn't matter where they're from, pretty much every single one of them has a different accent and a different voice. Glockter is really great because he was once tortured in his past. He is a torture victim who has become a torturer in his own right, and all his teeth have been knocked out. And so the narrator really brings this to life with this sort of like going, "I'm Glockter, and I can't speak properly because all my teeth have been drilled out one by one, and it's so painful." And he goes on like this, and that's really enjoyable. And again, his practicals as well. One of them has had his tongue ripped out or cut out, or most of his tongue cut out as well. And it's really fun to have one person who's had his teeth knocked out and one person who's had his tongue cut out to have conversations, and not sort of be mentioning it all the time, but it's always just there in the background when these guys are interacting together. So yeah, I would say, like, you know, 5 stars for the 5 stars for the narration. Except one thing, he does mispronounce some words, in my opinion. Now, so it's a fantasy book, and it's a gritty fantasy book. There's lots of grimacing going on. Now, if you grimace, I think it's pronounced grimace. And Stephen, what was his name again? Stephen Pacey thinks it's grimace. So lots of times Logan will grimace, and he grimaced at that, and he was grimacing. And is it grimace or is it grimaced? Send in emails, luke@juggler.net. Get back to me on that one, because I think it is grimacing. If you grimace, like you grin and then you grimace, and you frown and you grimace, not grimaced. Maybe I've been thinking it and saying it wrong all this time. Yeah, but otherwise, really good narration. Really enjoyed it there. There's a reason why I finished the book as well, I tell you that. The themes of the book. I would talk about the thematic exploration of the book, but I think the only thing I can bring from the book is that life is hard and gritty, and sometimes you do things without knowing why you're doing them and without a lot of meaning. However, I think there's probably better ways to do that than just writing a shit novel. So let me talk a bit about fantasy to finish up here. Science fiction, I like this. I can't remember when we were talking about it or what book we were talking about on the SFF Audio podcast, and someone said science fiction, it shocks the reader into experiencing something new, and fantasy is about sort of drawing the reader in and slowly letting them experience something new. Something like that. I'm paraphrasing whoever said it, and I actually really enjoy that definition. It's that, you know, to science fiction is like, go bang, something new, deal with this, guys, and you go, oh, like that. And fantasy is more like, hey, check it out, we've got some, you know, we've got something here which you like, we're going to bring you in this way, we're going to slowly reveal the world to you, and as we do this, you can sort of explore in a different way. And it's a different, you know, it's a different kind of it's a different way to bring in a reader, you know, immerse them in some way or shock them in some way, plunge them into freezing cold water, slowly draw them into a warm bath, you know, different ways of doing it. This book is obviously an attempt to do something new with fantasy, to bring sort of this raw edge to it, subvert the genre conventions of fantasy in kind of some shocking way, which, as a science fiction fan, I'm all for, and I really enjoy it. When I've read people who do this in the past, they go, hey, check it out, guys, something new with fantasy, and you go, oh, that's great. Like I say, Brandon Sanderson, he does that. He sort of brings in new, so he goes, well, this is, you know, a conventional fantasy, but, you know, there's not going to be a quest, it's all going to be set in one city, and you think, oh, that's good, whole fantasy book set in one city, and he's going, yeah, but tell you what, I can still tell a great story, you don't need to go on a quest, and you go, oh, this is really good. You know, so if you aim for that kind of thing and hit it on the head, I'm not saying Brandon Sanderson is gritty in any way, but I'm just saying he I think he's doing something slightly different in fantasy than I read other people doing as well. And again, something like the, what was the book that I read last year? The really long one, which was told in one day, but took 3 days to listen to. The Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss. Again, that he's trying to do something slightly different with fantasy as well. He's trying to, you know, twist things around. And I think he did. He was telling a story in a different way. Again, I don't think he got far enough along in the story and he took too long telling it. But, you know, I commend him for trying something new. In this book, though, it fails. And suddenly I understand why it fails. Because you've got to make the new readers happy. So he puts in lots of swearing and grittiness and, you know, fighting and interesting characters. And he goes, oh, look, there's this, you know, we're going to have a torturer as a main character. And you think, I can see that he's trying to think of something new to do here. But then you think, well, like the shadow of the torturer has the torturer in the title. And we're talking about a torturer. And also there was another book that I read last year at the same time, almost at the same time as that, I read The Shadow of the Torturer, which was the Transmission by Ian Banks as well. And that has a main character who's a torturer. So a main character who is a torturer isn't anything new, but you can see that he's going, oh, we're going to go gritty here. We're going to go in this different direction. But then to keep the old fantasy readers happy, Joe Abercrombie also has to put in like all the old tropes. So we just get this really bland mix of it's like this book is just... It's not gritty enough to be gritty fantasy. You know, like The Steel Remains by Richard K. Morgan. He was going, fuck it, I'm going to push this to a place where fantasy haven't been to before. And I'm going to do that by having a gay protagonist who has anal sex with an alien. And I'm going to have, you know, women swearing and all this different kind of stuff. He did gritty pretty well. You know, it wasn't as gritty as it could be, but in some ways you don't want it to be too gritty, you don't want it to be too violent, you don't want it to be too much, you know, sex and all that kind of thing, because it can take away from, you know, the story and take away from the characters. But he did it. And also The Prince of Nothing is really gritty. You're talking like there is no female characters in there, and it doesn't even try to attempt to not be completely sexist and misogynistic. Like the main character, one main character is an evil empress who is like having an incestuous relationship, another female character is a whore, a prostitute, another one is a sex slave, and that's it. Those are your female characters, guys. That's what you got to work with. And it just goes with it, and you just go, oh fuck, this is grim, this is unrelenting. But you just go with it, and this book just isn't, it's just not great. It's too twee, it's too like, oh, we're going to be gritty and we're going to throw in swearing. But actually the world is really pleasant, you know. Logan, he doesn't really actually have to go up against anything too bad. Glockta's been tortured, but he's got a pretty good life now. It seems like he's having fun. And Giselle, this other main character, you know, he's just this pretty nice guy, you know, a bit dim, a bit sexist, but, you know, a bit full of himself. But otherwise he has a pretty good life. You know, he trains hard at this, you know, this tournament. And you just go, well, where's the... Just putting in swearing and fight scenes and people being stabbed a lot doesn't make it gritty. You've got to sort of bring in danger into the world, and there's no danger to the world. The only danger to the world is the barbarians on the coast or on the horizon, and nobody really takes them seriously, so you don't really feel it any as well. And if you're going to mess around with plot, if you're going to do like the idea of, okay, we're going to have someone who goes out and fails, you know, that's what Mistborn is. You get someone, you know, the story is about... I don't want to give too much away here, but about people going on a quest and failing, or someone setting out to do something and failing, and what happens then. You know, he's doing something different with plotting, and you know, and also this book, it doesn't have the like literary style of the Game of Thrones, which the writing in Game of Thrones is really interesting. You know, the Book of the New Sun, again, you've got this interesting writing, and it doesn't have like the ambitious world building of something like Perdido Street Station. It doesn't have any ambitious world building at all. And also, if you're just wanting fun characters running around doing fun stuff, The Lies of Locke Lamara has got some fun characters going around and going on interesting adventures, even though there's not, you know, the stakes in that book, you're thinking, oh, they're not so high, but at least he fills it up with characters who you remember and go, oh, these characters are really cool, I want to read more about them and stuff like that. If you're going to do epic fiction, go epic. And if you're going to do heroic fiction, go heroic. And I don't want it just to be like someone like David Gemmell, where back when I was like 14 or 15, I really enjoyed sort of big men with swords going out. And you know why I enjoyed that? Because the big men with the swords cared about what they were fighting for. And when they stood on the battles and the barbarian hordes were coming in, or the goblins were going to come in, and it was just them, you know, it was them on the wall, and the goblins were on one side and the free world was on the other side, and it was just down to them, and they had to slay every single last barbarian in the horde. And that's what they did, and it was awesome, and I really used to enjoy that kind of thing. You got to make me care about what someone is fighting for if they're meant to be a hero. Now, I'm not saying that I want everything to be in a formula, because all these books that I've otherwise enjoyed more than this one, they do interesting things in interesting ways, in different ways than, you know, traditional fantasy, even though if you want to look at it this way, take them all together and this is what modern fantasy is, or what it could be, or what, you know, things can represent it. But what was I trying to say there? Yeah, I don't just want the stable boy finding a sword and going to kill the castle. I just want it to be good. I just want it to, you know, I just want the story to be as good as that I often find in science fiction. And I don't want you to just go, ah, what we're going to do is I'm going to take, let's just see how long this audiobook is here, 22 hours and 18 minutes to set up a group of four people who you don't really care about going on a quest that they don't care about and you can't care about to do something to save the country from maybe... Is it to save the country from the barbarian hordes, or is it because there's a new, like, as mentioned in the last 18 minutes of the book, we find out there is some other magic going on somewhere in the world, and that is now what we're going to be stopped. So I was like, wait a second, so this whole thing with Gloctor and the Mercers, that's not important. The tournament that Giselle was going for, that's not important. The people that, you know, the barbarian that, Logan represents, is that not important either? It all just comes down to that some magicians are going, oh, like Gandalf is going, oh, fuck, you know? There's this other thing happening over here. It's like you get to the end of the Fellowship of the Rings and only then do you find out, oh, there's a... Guys, did you know there's going to be a ring in this series and we're fighting against, Mordor? No, we're fighting against Sauron in Mordor. And you find out that on the last page of the book, and none of the people in the Fellowship of the Rings have found that out so far. And you just go, oh, you've got to do better than that. You've got to bring me in a bit better than that. I like gritty. I like, you know, disrupting conventions of fantasy. I like the old conventions of fantasy if it's just plain fantasy done well with a story well told. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to break the formulas if you don't want to. But if you're gonna, give me a good story. Anyway, I'm going to give this book 2.5 stars because no matter what's there, I did enjoy parts of it. I did enjoy the narration. 2.5... The thing is, after thinking about it for a week, like, if you'd have said, hey, when you finish this book, what do you give it? I'd be like, oh, 2.5 stars. Now I'm thinking 2 stars. So I think I'm gonna go with sort of, like, after mulling about it for a week, I'm going to give this book 2 stars. Yeah, that's it. What else? Final note here. What else do I have here? Nope, that's it. That's all my notes done. So, yeah, thanks a lot for listening. The next book that I'm going to be reviewing is Eiffelheim, which hopefully will be an interesting review of a book that I started last January and finished a few days ago, just because it was a book that I was always reading in between other books and never... I'll talk about it next week. There's no point in me going. That's by Michael Flynn there, Eiffelheim. If you enjoyed this review, please email me, luke@juggler.net. I do reply to every email that I get, or the vast majority, you know, maybe 1% slips through and I miss it. And again, if you've sent me an email and I've not replied, please send it again, or send another email, or do something like that, luke@juggler.net. I really enjoy chatting with people and discussing books and everything, anything with people as well. I recently got an email from a listener saying, hey, I've got some issues with... actually, I'm not going to go into it. But it was nothing to do with science fiction, and something very personal. And I don't mind personal emails. If you think I'm the only person that you want to talk to, or that you feel that you can talk to, great. Send me the emails. I do reply to everyone. I'm here for you people. Otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter, Luke Burridge on Twitter. I'm @LukeBurridge on Twitter. You can follow what I'm doing and see my reviews on goodreads.com/LukeBurridge. And there's lots of other people on there. And I've got lots of friends on there who listen to this podcast, so I enjoy seeing what other people think. Oh, maybe I'll do this. Let me bring up here as well. I always forget to do this here. The Blade Itself, First Law, my review. 25 other people have reviewed it. So Membrilu, who's a listener, or at least a friend of mine on goodreads.com, I would say what they thought about it, but it's all in French, so I can't see what they're doing there. Who else wrote something about that? Sandy rated it 5 stars. Yeah, okay, if you're going to rate it 5 stars, that's fine. And lots of other people have rated it 4 or 5 stars. I'm sorry that I just realised, yeah, the average of this book, The Blade Itself by Joe Abercrombie of SFBRP listeners, is 4.17, and I'm giving it 2 stars. So maybe people can convince me that this book is good, but I think I'm going to take quite a bit of convincing. Anyway, yeah, goodreads.com is a really great way to find out what you're doing and how you're reading books and things like that. Also, you can, what's the other thing? Oh yeah, see what I'm doing on my blog. I'm lukeburridge.com/blog. I'm putting up stuff there all the time, actually a bit less now because I'm ill, and or I have been ill, so I'll be putting new stuff up there. Photography, you know, videos, juggling, all that kind of stuff goes up on my blog. And finally, yeah, check out sfbrp.com. There's a list of every single episode as sorted by episode number and rating and author, so you can find out sort of generally what I think about books there too. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.